One mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice. One mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice. One mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice. One mic, one voice.
Welcome to the One Mic, One Voice show, Building the Collective Conscious, a show that is created to give space where your voice, ideas, and informed opinions can be heard, appreciated, and debated. I am Michael Eric Owens.
And I'm DT, and welcome to episode 118.
Man, 118. You've been putting in some work, Doc.
Man, 118 times.
And you know, I appreciate you carrying me along the way.
Oh, no doubt. Likewise. I appreciate you for being here when I couldn't. I didn't want to deduct a couple of my hours
right from that.
DT been absent a few times.
Well, you're a world traveler, so we know we got to let you experience the world. And man, we have an exciting show today. Got great feedback from the show last week with the top assistant basketball coach for the Oklahoma City Thunder, Adrian Griffin. Man,
shout out.
Oh, man, he's an amazing, amazing guy. And we're looking forward to having him come back. We did have some feedback from our listeners that had some more questions about leadership. And leadership is just so crucial in today's society. And we're going to revisit that, I think, probably multiple times. But it's Immigrant Heritage Month, man.
Yes, sir.
You know, right alongside Black Music Month. Mm-hmm. And so it's a great opportunity to just highlight the accomplishments that immigrants have brought to this country and continue to bring to this country, man. This country would not be what it is today without their contribution. So, folks, get out there, learn something about these contributions. And the Mayor Hope, good friend of mine, made a proclamation in Oklahoma City. You know, he's a great guy, and his desire to acknowledge all Oklahomans, I think, is a powerful, powerful thing. But, man, so American Immigration is our title. And if anybody is watching the news or listening to the radio or even listening to the One Mic, One Voice show, you know that immigration is a hot, hot topic. And it has been for a very long time. But, man, it went to a whole nother level. And we you know, we used to beat up on 45 all the time. And then we just got tired of beating him up because everything he did was just dumber and dumber. And so we tend to not give him any credence.
We were 45 and down the road quite a bit.
Yeah, we were 45.
Then we just got out of the car.
Right.
Start walking another direction.
Right, man. So we have two great guests in the studio. We're still waiting on one. He's a very important man. He probably had to make some stops before he got here to solve some problems. But what I'm going to say is our guests in the studio. Man, you know, when I was reading their bios, I was like, you've got to be kidding me. I mean, are these folks like 90? I mean, all the things they have accomplished in the years that they have been on this earth is just amazing. Geraldo Rico, welcome to the show, my friend.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
And we have Erica Lucas here. Thank you for being with us, Erica.
Thank you for having me.
And Geraldo, he's recently graduated from OSU. The unique thing, he was smuggled into the country at age 4. And now he's with the DACA program. I mean, I'm just, you know, first of all, let me just say this. This is an education podcast, right? I mean, we are here to learn today. And you know, every week we try to educate, but I can speak for myself. The class is in session.
Man, you're reading my mind.
Hey, and I'm a student today, man, and I'm thankful. I'm thankful to have Brother Rico here with us. So we want to hear from him. You know, Erica, man, if I read your bio, we'll take up the whole hour. But she's the founder of Stitch Crew, which recently partnered with the Oklahoma City Thunder, Launchpad Tech Acceleration. She's worked at the Oklahoma Department of Commerce, where she served as the global director and led the foreign direct investment. In other words, she's smart.
Yeah.
Okay, let's just cut to the chase. And, you know, she
Erica's got it going on.
Oh, man, she's got it going on. And so, you know, thank you both for coming here. We still have one special guest that's going to be here. But let's go ahead and just get the conversation started. And I guess right off the bat, I just want to just get your observations about where we are at a country right now with the immigration debacle.
I'll let you go first.
Okay. Well, there's like kind of like what you touched on before. Immigration has always been an issue here in the United States just because, you know, the United States has been founded on immigrants. But it has gone to a whole different level over recent months, over the recent years. And I just feel like right now it's a very crucial turning point in today's society because right now all those issues, good and bad, surrounding immigration are kind of being brought to light and just more focus is being put on those issues. Whereas before, it was just mainly those affected or those people that knew someone that was affected by it. Those were the only ones that were aware of the situation.
Your thoughts, Erica?
How much time did you say we have? You know, I think that where we are right now, unfortunately, is as a result of not doing anything about it, right? Of staying in the status quo. And I think I if we do get into the different subjects, I like to separate that, you know, right now we have a crisis with people that are coming here to ask for asylum. And that's it's a different subject. But I always like to make the difference because when people tend to, migrate different issues into one, and it's really broader than that. Mm-hmm. And so there is one issue that we must address, and it's with these people primarily coming from Central and Latin America.
Okay.
To seek asylum. And, so there's that one issue with kids being separated from their families only because they're coming here, by the way, following protocol, right? Mm-hmm. Turning themselves in.
Absolutely.
Which is a misdemeanor. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of the opponents say, well, you know, they're coming here illegally. No, actually, they're asking for asylum. Mm-hmm. They're doing it following protocol. They're turning themselves in. And it's a misdemeanor. Therefore, we shouldn't be separating them, mm-hmm. right? We don't separate families for misdemeanors, at least until now.
Yeah.
And then there's the issue with the overall immigration problem, which, you know, we have 11 million people that are undocumented. That's a totally separate issue, and I'd love to tell you guys about either one, but again, talk about it in different terms.
And I think we need to talk about it in different terms. I was listening to the radio this past week, and a gentleman called in and said how if I commit a crime, my kids are taken away from me. I mean, the reality is, you know where your kids are going. Usually they call a relative to come get your kids. I mean, it's not the same thing, right? I mean, it's an ethological fallacy, actually. But let's talk about that protocol for a minute. You know, they're voluntarily giving themselves up, and we see what they say, 2,300 children that are separated from their parents, the number is probably larger, okay?
That we know of, right?
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. So talk a little bit about that so our audience can understand.
Well, I mean, I guess the arguments are, you know, why are these people not applying for asylum in their own countries? Why do they have to come here and do all of that? And I think that what a lot of people need to understand is that they're fleeing those countries for a reason, right? And even if you try to process a petition in your home country, sometimes it can take months, sometimes years, and sometimes you get denied. You don't even get an appointment to get into the application process. And when you're fleeing something, to try to wait that long, I mean, it's just not feasible. So people actually are taking the risk. They're so desperate. I really pray that some of those people that are so, you know, close-minded about the refugees, that they never have to go through something so dire and be at such a desperate need that they do hire coyotes or they do travel cross countries and come to this country to try to ask for or try to look for hope here in town. So, I mean, what is there to say?
You know, at that point, it's like the situation is so critical. Something needs to be done, like, right now. Don't have a month to wait. Don't have years to wait. And like you said, it's such an emergency situation that people, I mean, who knows what could happen in between time when you get invited to a petition or accepted in the application process or whatever. It's just like time is ticking.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
What individual wants to leave their home of origin, leave their family, leave everything they know? I mean, that's like us right mm-hmm. now, yeah. saying we had to just run away from everything that we know. And then we flee to a country, to their border, and follow their protocol, and you take my child.
Right.
I mean, it just, it mm-hmm. you know, one thing that Americans lack is empathy. We have a huge lack of empathy in this country. And the fact that you cannot put yourself in these folks' position, I think, is the biggest crisis that we have. This is not about borders. This is about humanity.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
See, and yeah. And if we can't understand that, we can never truly have a conversation that leads to some sort of reform.
Right.
You know, folks, listen, we have a great show. We're going to take a break here, pay a few bills, right? Just a few. Can't pay too many of them. Because we ain't got that much money.
Yeah, send them IOU.
Some IOUs. Man, when we come back, we want to hear Geraldo's story. We want to get down to it, let him talk about his life and the challenges that he's facing. We want to hear that. You know what? If you want to learn from the source, you know, we hear all this, all these narratives going around. We're talking to the folks that are on the front lines that know what's happening. It's time to learn. We will be right back.
Oklahoma Humanities Brain Box podcast uses the humanities to take listeners on a deep dive into the issues affecting American society and culture. Join some of Oklahoma's most interesting and knowledgeable humanities scholars to explore how history, literature, ethics, philosophy, and other humanities fields inform our understanding of current events and the human experience. And to find the Brain Box podcast, simply search Brain Box Podcast on iTunes, Podbean, Google Play, and any other podcasting library. If you have any ideas or comments rattling around in your noggin, email us at brainbox@okhumanities.org.
This is Dr. Laura Gelat, and when I listen to podcasts, I always listen to the One Mic, One Voice show.
All right, we back. We back. We back. Man, we talk immigration. It's hot. It's hot in here. But it's a hot topic, and we need to do something about it. I think on the macro level and the micro level, and things are happening. People are standing up. People are protesting. People are getting organized. People are filing lawsuits, D. Why? Because it is wrong what we see. Wrong what we see today. And Geraldo, let's talk a little bit about your experience and just wherever you want to begin and take us to, but talk about your life. And you came here at age 4. Talk about your life, my friend.
Yes. Well, it's very interesting, you know, to talk about my life and, you know, so very limited time. You know, there's so many things that I can talk about of how, you know, being undocumented and coming here, you know, at a very young age and growing up here, how that has affected me in so many different areas, you know, from emotional to financial to, you know, educational, all different aspects. But for sure, you know, I'll start from the beginning, I guess. So, you know, I was born in San Luis Potosi, Mexico. I was brought here by my parents at the age of 4. And so when I came here, and it was in December of 1999. So coming here, you know, obviously I was very confused at what was going on. I didn't know what was going on. You know, my parents just kind of picked me up and one day just took me in another place, and all of a sudden everyone else, you know, doesn't speak the same language as you. And so growing up, my parents never hid the fact that I was undocumented, which is very different in my case. I've heard so many other stories where other students, other undocumented immigrants, other DACA recipients, they tell me and they said, oh, well, I didn't know about my status until I was in high school, until I started applying for college, for jobs, for driver's license. That wasn't my case. I knew from the minute that I arrived here that I was undocumented, and my parents never hid the consequences of that. And so they basically told me, you know, keep your head down and, you know, move forward. And so that's kind of what I did. I just went through the educational system, you know, went through elementary school, went through middle school, through high school. And during that whole time, I definitely felt that presence of that status, where I wasn't able to tell people about certain things of my life. I couldn't open up in certain areas. My parents would even say, hey, make sure you don't talk about where you're from, you know, and, you know, that's something I feel like it's so weird, because obviously a lot of us, everyone should definitely be proud of, you know, their culture, their upbringings and everything. And so that's kind of something I had to keep to myself. And so going into high school, nobody knew my undocumented status. I always kept it to myself. And when the conversation did arise, I was very self-conscious at the time and just kind of diverted away from it, or just kind of kept my mouth shut and, you know, didn't say anything. And so when the time came where I wanted to pursue higher education, when I wanted to, you know, to aspire to, you know, to go for a career, for, you know, just a better life, and not just for myself, it's always been for my parents, for my family, because I feel like out of my family, I feel like I'm the most adept at dealing with all these kind of situations. I learned English. I was, you know, I know the American history. I know the American culture. I can assimilate here. Whereas my parents, they're still, you know, very rooted to their culture. And so right when I set myself to do that, to pursue, you know, a higher education, that's when I started hitting a couple of walls where I started realizing, well, wait, I can't just get any kind of job that I want to, that I, you know, I can't just work at this, you know, office job. I can't work at this retail job to raise money to go to college. And then also came scholarships or financial aid, things like that. That's when I started realizing, wait, it turns out I'm not eligible for federal or state, you know, financial aid. I'm not eligible for these private scholarships. Regardless of, you know, what I did in high school, what I did in the community, you know, I just couldn't. Mm-hmm. And so when I applied, you know, I applied to universities here in the state of Oklahoma. I applied to out of state, and I started receiving the acceptance letters. And so I was very happy about it. I was, you know, my parents, they worked so hard, you know, to achieve that goal for me. They were very excited about it. And so I was starting to make plans, you know, of where I wanted to go, what I wanted to study. And then later on is where I started receiving those phone calls, those emails asking, well, you know, we'd noticed on your application you didn't provide a social security number. Can you, you know, provide us one, or, you know, anything like that? And so at the time I was, you know, I just came out front and I said, well, I don't have one. And so, you know, they would say, okay, well, we'll get back to you. We just got to check a few things here and there. And then, you know, a few weeks later, they'd get back to me and say, oh, well, you're still able to attend to our university. Just the financial aid that we were able to offer you at first, we're no longer able to offer you. And so at that point, out of state universities, at least the ones I was interested, we're just not an option anymore, just because of the price of it, just because I wasn't able to afford it. And at the time as well, in Oklahoma, even students, even if, you know, I went through the educational system here in Oklahoma. I graduated from high school. And yet still, in the eyes of many universities, I was still considered an out-of-state student here in Oklahoma. And so I was still going to be charged in regards to tuition as an out-of-state student. And so that also made things very expensive, very out of reach. And so at that time, you know, just stores started closing just because of that. And it was a tough time. It was definitely a tough time to really, you know, to kind of get by and just figure out what I was going to do. And then there came a point where I almost just kind of said, you know, this is it. This is it. Either I have one or two options. Either I just, you know, find a job that doesn't require, you know, any kind of documentation, which at the time I worked in the field. So I worked like watermelon fields, peanut fields, stuff like that. You know, which is what a lot of the immigrant communities, that's kind of where they end up working in, you know, those kind of jobs where, you know, they don't ask that kind of documentation. And so that's kind of where I saw my life heading, either that or just go back home to Mexico and just kind of start a life again all over. But, you know, thanks to my parents, thanks to them, they really pushed me forward. They really gave me that motivation to continue to really, you know, say, hey, this isn't the end of the road. This is still just one more obstacle, and we're just going to have to find a way to get around it. And so around that time is when President Obama, in 2012, he signed an executive order that basically set up the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program. And that program, to many of us, it was a light at the end of the tunnel, so to speak. It provided us with a worker's permit, so now we were able to legally work and contribute, you know, by paying taxes and you know, just really just following the laws. And being able to, you know, obtain a driver's license, being able to obtain an ID, to be able to do those jobs, be able to go to school. And then at the time, you know, universities across the U.S., not only in Oklahoma, but across the U.S., they were becoming more aware of this issue of like, okay, we have students in the educational system that are not documented, yet they still strive the same thing as any regular citizen. Like, they still want to do the things that anyone else wants to do, which is the pursuit, you know, of a better life. And so at that time, I tried again. I tried again. I went my first year to Oklahoma City Community College. I did a year there, and then eventually I transferred to, you know, Oklahoma State University. And then after that, you know, I graduated from there, and, you know, right away try to just, you know, start my career, And as much as I am grateful for the DACA program, there is still work to be done. There is still work to be done within, you know, immigration reform in general, within the DACA program, within a pathway to citizenship, within the asylum system. And so right now, on September 5th, when Donald Trump, you know, announced the resigning of that program, that definitely was a hard blow, not just to myself, but to everyone that was under the program, because, again, it made us feel like we had to start all the way back from the beginning. And not even that, because we couldn't even start anything, because even though we had the degrees, even though we had these studies, we were no longer able to exercise those those degrees. And so with all this rhetoric going around with, you know, won't we, will we take away DACA, you know, it's just been such a, you know, such a roller coaster, not just for myself, but like just DACA recipients across the nation with their families. And right now that's what we're in hopes of, you know, a solution, you know, and a permanent solution at that, not just a temporary one where, you know, it's just extended for another 2 years, for another 4 years or so forth.
Yeah. You have a powerful story, and I thank you for sharing it. I applaud your parents for having the courage to seek a better life, for you.
We did have a question for one of our listeners. It says, what can someone like myself do to help immigrants when I live so far from the border and I live in an area that does not see many minorities at all.
Please call your legislators. That's the best thing that you can do. And yes, don't call them just one time or email them one time. Do it every day. Because I will say the DACA program, it's dire. If nothing gets done, people like Gerardo are going to lose status. Employers are not going to be able to continue to employ them. How we're going to deal with deportations, that's still up in the air. But, I mean, a lot of bad things could happen if that program is – that program or immigration reform as a whole doesn't get fixed. That's one. And then for the people, if your concern is also with the people at the border and the children that are being held and less than, amicable places, just continue to call, because even though the president did sign an executive order, actually all it does, yes, it keeps families together detained. So it's also not a solution. So if you don't mind, please call. I think that's the best thing that you can do.
Mm-hmm. We have one more. It says, are parents uneducated on the processes of the consequences? I guess it's when you were talking about there being consequences. Or do they just think getting the children here will be enough?
Well, in my experience, I feel like both. I feel like certain parents, like Erica was kind of touching earlier on, they do know, you know, that there is a way to seek asylum. There is a way to definitely do it through legal means. And so they try to. They definitely try to. It's just that right now, with the current immigration system, it makes it very difficult to really do that, to really, first of all, apply, to be accepted, to, you know, what a misconception is, what I hear is, how come your parents, how come yourself, how come you haven't applied, you know, for residency, for citizenship? And the thing is, with the current system, you know, it takes decades sometimes. It takes thousands and thousands of dollars, you know, on top of, you know, just being careful of, you know, not, you know, during that whole time, just being careful of not, you know, being detained or, you know, getting into any problems with immigration. So, with that, but on the other side, there are parents who aren't completely as aware. And I feel like one of the things that kind of answering the previous question of, you know, what can people do, you know, wherever they are, is definitely what Erica touched on. And simply just growing awareness of the issue and really getting the facts out. Because there's so many misconceptions going on right now about what immigrants are doing, what the system in place right now can and cannot do. And so just being able to just research the facts, getting the word out of what's really going on, both at the border, with DACA, with, you know, just with everything. And I feel like that's something that needs to be done quickly.
And the reality is, man, this is your country. You've been here. Yes. This is your life, man. I mean, this is more familiar to you than any place on the planet. And you have contributed. What do we want in this country? We want individuals like you, mm-hmm. right? I mean, you have the skewed narrative out there about immigrants, you know, coming over here. They're criminals. They're this, they're that. Immigrants, undocumented people, commit less crimes than American citizens. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's, you know, the data's there. And so I think, you know, bringing that human element to the conversation and your story and your triumph over, man, I could only imagine, right, being in a school, having to hold part of who you are and what you are and still excel. Mm-hmm. That speaks of your character.
Yeah.
You know, and you're not the only one, right?
Not yet, for sure.
There's so many out there that are just doing wonderful things and contributing to this nation. And I think if we can, as you say, and Erica talks about being educated, being informed about what's going on, that begins, especially on the micro level, that begins to change the conversation and the dialogue, folks. And listen, we're gonna take a break. We're gonna come back. I want to talk about Erica. Just was recently featured in an article dealing with immigration and employment. So I want to talk a little bit about that, because that narrative is just, I don't know where it is. People don't even, you know what I mean? They don't even know what the hell they're talking about. So let's come back. Let's talk about that. And folks, we're going to go even deeper in this second half of the hour. We'll be right back.
Hi everyone, this is Roxy Davis.
And this is Deborah Burris, and we are
the Roxy by Design Show. Our show is designed to bring healing as we share our stories while God redesigns our lives.
So take a ride with us.
So you can find us at
Podbean, iTunes,
Facebook and Twitter,
and
blackandstudios.com. So thank you everyone for listening to the Roxy by Design Show. You have a blessed day.
We love you.
This is DT of the One Mic, One Voice podcast. Just want to let you guys know you can go over to iTunes and search us at One Mic, One Voice, and be sure to rate and review our episodes. Let us know about any feedback that you have and what you enjoy about the episodes. Also, you can go over to Stitcher, where you can get the latest and freshest episodes of our podcast streamed directly to your smartphone or iPad. No downloading or syncing. How cool? Real smooth. Also, we'd just like to take the time to thank you for your time and for your energy and for spending time with us as we discuss the historical record of our time.
Eleven million people undocumented in this country.
11 million.
11 million. That's a lot.
That's a lot.
But they're here, contributing, living in the shadows. But they're human. They're not different. They're not deficient. They're just here, trying to find a better life. Who doesn't want a better life? I want a better life. How can I get a better life? You know, maybe somebody can type that in. You know what I mean? Who doesn't want a better, who wants a worse life?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You go where you can get a better life, man. And they are contributing. Just recently, Erica, you were featured, I believe this was in the Daily Oklahoman, in an article on immigration and employment. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so it was actually an op-ed that I did because the rhetoric was getting too nasty, right? And I think that to what Gerardo say, people are not reading up and getting educated on the subject. So so I decided to write an op-ed and basically just talk a little bit about, you know, one of the biggest challenges that we have is that people seem to think that immigrants are not contributing to our economy, that instead they're you know, taking advantage of social programs and draining our economy. And that's just not true. There are a lot of statistics out there that just point out to that. For example, here in Oklahoma, we have about 220,000 immigrants. Okay. Overall. And within that, and I always emphasize, you know, there's 220,000 here. That are paying taxes, that are contributing to our economy. Out of those, the undocumented immigrants are also paying taxes, right? So there is the tax identification number that actually undocumented immigrants can get from the government to be able to contribute to their taxes. But in addition, you know, they buy things. They pay sales tax. They get loans. They buy cars.
They buy clothes. Oh, they eat. You know, exactly. They're human, right? Right.
Yes. So when you take that stuff into consideration, you know, they're actually contributing more than they're taken out. And really what they're taken out, if you're undocumented, you can't qualify. That's another myth, right?
Yes.
That you qualify for so many benefits. You don't. The only one that we can deny, thanks to the legislation that was passed years ago, is it's education. And if we are not going to offer education to children, then we have bigger issues, right? Yeah, whether you're documented or undocumented. So I think that's why I wrote that op-ed, just to highlight. I'm looking at my numbers to make sure that I state them right. But, you know, what was it, $50 million that are paid annually, you know, by undocumented immigrants to our tax system. To where right now, I don't know if you guys follow our state legislature, but we can't take those contributions for granted.
Exactly.
Right? We need those tax dollars, yeah. and undocumented people are paying for them. So yeah.
Great article. So you were compelled to write that. You know, that sometimes you have to interject yourself into the dialogue when it becomes so ridiculous that, you know, people, and you hear that all the time. I mean, the argument, they don't pay any taxes and, you know, they're just getting so, I mean, it's, well, they say the same thing about black people. So, I mean, they've been saying that about that for us forever. Right. Yeah. So we're accustomed to that. We support our black and brown brothers and sisters completely.
We had another question. Says, can American citizens open their homes to immigrants who are not documented? And I guess, what would that look like?
Well, first of all, that's a really sweet and nice comment. I mean, yes, you can. Unfortunately, it just doesn't change the laws, right? So yes. People can still come to your house, even if you open it up to somebody that's undocumented. You know, the ICE can still come and get those people and deport them. So really, again, the best thing to do if you want to help is call your legislator and demand, not ask, but demand that they take a proactive approach to solving the bigger issue. I think that from my perspective and my humble ask is that the most dire need right now is to keep the families together.
Yeah.
Yes.
Not in detention, but actually together. It's a misdemeanor. Even if you cross the border illegally, even if you didn't turn yourself in and you cross the border illegally, it's still a misdemeanor. And we don't separate families for misdemeanors. Just like, you know, if you don't buckle your seatbelt, you're not going to...
Taking your kids.
So that's the first thing that I would ask. And then the second thing that I would ask that you ask your legislators is that they take a look at the overall immigration reform. Another thing that we don't talk a lot about, you know, because something that I get asked as an advocate is, well, you know, those countries let's talk a little bit about the refugee situation. Why are those countries not doing more to keep them there? And it's their problem, not America's problem. It is America's problem, though, because those people are fleeing countries where drug cartels are taking over and are making it impossible for them to live there, right? And so they're fleeing a lot of times. I'm not saying that every country is that way, but and where is the consumption happening? In America. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we need to, one, recognize that we're part of the problem, right? Mm-hmm. Particularly now that we're looking at criminal justice reform, you know, here in the state, whether we accept, you know, decriminalizing certain drugs, because we have to have a broader discussion. You know, the drug wars, the drug cartels, the drug trafficking with the border is not just Mexico's problems or Central America's problems. It's our problem because it's a supply and demand issue.
We're the consumers,
right? Mm-hmm. And so and you know, if it's not Mexico, if it's not Central America, if it's somebody's going to supply it, right? So. I think that we need to, again, be smart about the debate and talk about the broader issue and then come up with solutions, whether you're Republican or Democrat. Let's just be, one, honest about it, be educated on the subject, and then let's just have honest and open discussions.
And what you speak to, Erica, is a willingness to not, number one, be educated, but also to not simply go for the cliches or the so-called platitudes of simply build a wall,
Right.
Right. I mean, it's much deeper than that. It's much more complex than that. And you have all of these moving parts and components. And if you don't want to do the work, I can sit back and say, well, we just need to build a wall,
right.
Which is ridiculous. We have finally arrived from very important business, Luis Hidalgo. Welcome to One Mic, One Voice, my
friend.
Thank you. And we appreciate you joining us. And we've been having just, a great discussion. I think I've been educated, and I know our listeners have. We've had some great questions come in. So we're talking about immigration, talking about, of course, what's going on at the border.
Right.
Just some of your thoughts briefly on what you're seeing, what you're experiencing. Where do we need to go?
Well, I work with Aspiring Americans, mm-hmm. which is a program that helps undocumented students navigate the college mm-hmm. higher education system. A lot of these families are, they're never first-generation college students. So we mainly focus on trying to help them navigate the higher education system. And it's important that that we help... it's important that we help the students. So we don't really work with the political mm-hmm. aspect of it. We mainly just try to provide that help.
Okay. And so what are some of the challenges that you see that they are facing?
Well, the increase people are not really trying to understand the problem. Mm-hmm. So I think that's important. Mm-hmm. The communities here in Oklahoma especially are not just not very understanding sometimes mm-hmm. of mm-hmm. the issues mm-hmm. that are happening with the mm-hmm.
So what schools are these students that you're working with? Is this, you said higher ed, so you're talking OSU, and are you talking?
University of Oklahoma,
okay.
University of Central Oklahoma mm-hmm. are some of the schools that we're working with.
Okay, yeah. Great. I can imagine that there is just as much desire, Geraldo spoke about this earlier, to have a higher education degree. For them as it would be for anybody,
right? And then things like DACA right now are very helpful, are really helping the students just have a job, mm-hmm. pay for their own education. I mean, they don't get any assistance. Mm-hmm. So they're working to pay for their school, and they have a lot of challenges mm-hmm. more than just your regular college student.
Absolutely.
They're dealing with a lot of different issues that are...
Absolutely. And so, briefly before we go to our last break, I want to just address kind of... we're talking over break, and I always laugh when folks tell me they ask me, what does the black community think? And I, how can I speak for the black community? I'm a black guy, but the community is not... Exactly. Speak with one voice. Just some of the, I think, your observations of what the Latino community, what really is there great fear? Is there... optimism? Is there anger? Is there what do you sense?
And before you answer that, I want to add to it, because you guys were talking about, and Geraldo brought this up earlier, about there being a lack of just overall awareness until this is brought in front of you. Mm-hmm. So until someone is affected by immigration, or those stories really don't come in your path. And so I guess to add on to his question, I want to know also, how tight-knit are those communities of awareness and of education that also give back to the community to just educate them on what's going on?
And I think there's fear in the community, but at the same time, there's a lot of expectation for better things that are coming. I think just the issue being talked about, it's important. And like you said, there's within... communities like Oklahoma and the states that are very, very conservative,
This is not an issue that gets talked about unless it's something really negative. Mm-hmm. Mm. So it's important to talk about it and know. I mean, this is an issue that we have here in Oklahoma, and even if we don't want to talk about it, right now we have a lot of undocumented people in Oklahoma. So it's important to talk about it and see it from the aspect that it's from not the negative aspect, but the good things that these communities are bringing here. So
I think Lee brings up a good point, because I think that often we tend to think of immigration as a national or a federal problem. And it really, I always think, no, it's a local issue, because this is where they live, right? So we have 220 immigrants in Oklahoma. By the way, 10,000 of them are entrepreneurs, which means they have their own business. They employ people. They pay over $200 million in taxes every year as a result of being, employers here. It's a local issue, right? We can't take it for granted, and we need to continue to see how we support them. And then I will say, to your earlier point, we're not monogamous either. Like, we don't all think alike. But I would say that within the Hispanic and community, all of us have a family member or a friend that's undocumented. I would say, and I dare say, all of us. And so the issue is very real, and it's very close. How does the community feel? Yes, of course, it's emotional. Of course, there's fear, because you're talking about somebody's cousin, family member, friend. It's not just somebody you work with or somebody that it's close to home. So,
does this at any level become a class issue in the community when people who are documented versus those who are undocumented, maybe looking down on those who are not? Or maybe causing just social problems between families, in the communities that they live in.
Yeah, I've heard that. Actually, I've heard from people, well, what about the people that did come here legally and, they didn't have to? I actually think that's I'm sure there are some people that feel very strongly about that. But I think that that's a problem that maybe some people outside of the community actually made up to try to make an argument, to be really honest, because it doesn't have to be a zero-sum game, right? I mean, the immigration system is broken for everybody, for those that come here legally and those that come here illegally. It creates a shadow economy. Like I just said, we just talked about all those taxes that are being paid. So for all those people that say, why are they not here paying tax? Okay, let's get them here legally so that you can't see that they are contributing here legally. Let's get them outside of the shadows.
Absolutely.
And there's a need in all the U.S. and in Oklahoma for the type of work that these immigrants are doing. We need them. They're obviously working here. They're not doing anything else. They're working. So, there's a need for these immigrants. So why not fix this broken immigration system and do something about this people that we do need them here?
We're going to take our last break. And when we come back, because, Luis just popped, he just tossed some on the table that I didn't necessarily want to go there, but we're going to go there. But I might have went there anyway. This idea, why don't we want it? Okay, let's examine that. Why don't we want it? So, folks, we're wrapping up the show, American Immigration. We're having a great time. We're being educated. We have some folks in here that, we're at the source.
Yeah, ask your questions now, because class is in session.
Absolutely.
The PhDs of the issue here with us.
Folks, we'll be right
back.
Thank you for downloading this episode. Here on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean,
Google Play Music, or whatever podcasting library you're listening to this show on, please rate and review. Those reviews and ratings help us tremendously. We thank you.
This is Quraysh Ali, Lansana, poet, author, educator in Oklahoma, and when I listen to podcasts, I'm on that one mic, one voice joint.
Why? Why don't we want to fix it, D? It seems the reasons, the rationality, the necessity, the humanality, right?
It's too hard. Build a wall.
Why don't we want to fix it? Well, I have my own thoughts. But I give them week to week. So, you know, it's just like when we had Brother Adam Zatani on here talking about, the Muslim debate I'm just gonna call it like I see it, man. I think if there were white kids being separated from their parents at that border, we'd be having a whole different sort of outrage. And because these are, you know, brown skinned folks like you and I, the value is less, right? But that's just my opinion. I'm not inferring this to our guests, but I'm just saying I think racism and the Mr. Trump's beginning with his campaign. That's an upgrade. I almost called him something else. I was trying to be nice.
Well, it's a political talking point that really generates a lot of emotion from voters.
Yeah.
So,
absolutely.
He's capitalizing on that same issue.
Yeah. When you become the enemy, right, the target, right, of this, this political season that we're in, and our country, you know, this, you can't look at immigration, and Erica, you talked about this, you can't look at it in isolation. And when we look at our country in the rise of nationalism, in the rise of take back our country, the debate to me is really about who is a citizen, who is a true American citizen, in light of us taking a country from Native peoples. Okay? Yeah. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, to go back to your original, why don't we want it, and references to our precedent. You know, when you use descriptive words like, they come and infest our country, or they're rapist, or and you generalize, right? Generalizing is that we just talked about that.
Yeah.
It's so dangerous. You can't just say, "Oh, you guys think the same. Oh, you guys go to the same church." You know? The same with immigrants. I mean, you can't say. And by the way, and I think it's important that for us advocates that we always say we want a secure border. Mm. Our kids live here. Of course we don't want bad people coming into our country doing negative things. I do think that there are smart ways to, if we're serious about border security and who we let in versus not, we should be invested in technology, right? Sensor technology, UAVs, a lot more efficient ways than building a wall that's going to cost us a lot of money, and Mexico's not going to pay for it.
Yeah, right.
the only They're wall not. We're paying for it is Mexico's, is Memo Ochoa, who's playing at the World Cup. That's the only wall we'll be paying for. But we can have serious conversations about how we secure our border. And I'm all for having those debates, even with people that I disagree with. But when you start using those words to talk about people, I don't care if you're brown, white, or whatever, it's, come on, there is a level of racism, right?
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that his supporters fall into that category, but the fact that it doesn't, that you still support somebody that says and does some of those things, I mean, I do question, right?
I mean, if I murder somebody, am I a murderer or am I just a killer? right? If I say racist things, am I a person that just says racist things, or am I a racist? I mean, you can semantics all day long, all right? You don't say things like that if you don't have those in your heart, right?
Well, and it's one thing to say it, and it's one thing to do things, right? So we're not just seeing somebody speak about things. Mm-hmm. He's actually taken implementation of some things that just makes you wonder.
And you can't, and not to have this as part of the dialogue, I think, is dangerous, because you can't solve the problem unless you talk about it in a holistic way, in the totality mm-hmm. of the discussion. And it's about value. Whose life is worth something? It's talk about equal opportunity and equality. All of these themes are registered within this debate. And I think what has happened today is that we have talked about these things in a way that I think people can walk away with a deeper understanding of what we're dealing with, simply by the stories that have been told here. I applaud the work that you're doing, and I think America is better off because of all of us, right? Who is a citizen? We all citizens. I mean, if you live somewhere all your life, what does that mean? I mean, this is all you know. This is what you've given your heart and your life to. And to simply say you don't belong here because we don't think you belong here, what does that mean?
Sounds so silly.
And to tie that all together and kind of go off of the question of, why not? I personally feel, at least from my perspective, is that immigration nowadays is also tied to other social problems that are going on in the United States today. The shootings that are going on across the nation. Difficulty in trying to go into another social class, into another economic class. I feel like all those things kind of also contribute and then are reinforced by nationalism, are reinforced by racism. Mm-hmm. We always hear of they're taking jobs, which, at least here in the state of Oklahoma, entrepreneurs actually employ around 29,000 American citizens. So, that's another misconception that goes around, without saying. But I feel like, citizens right now are definitely U.S. citizens are dealing with so many other social problems, social issues that, at least those people that say, let's kick these people out, let's not give them the opportunity. It's almost like a sense of insecurity where I rather protect myself first rather than the person next to me. Mm. I feel like that's what's going on right now because with all these things going on right now. Immigrants are all being labeled as, killers, as murderers, as, kind of leeching off the economy, of taking all the money back to other countries and things like that. And so I feel like that's another reason why a lot of people just kind of take the easy route and say, build a wall or just not give the opportunity to other people.
I will piggyback on something that you said is that, I think we need to do a better job at reaching out to those people that disagree with us in terms, because I do think that a lot of it comes from fear of two things. One, jobs and their security if they're suffering for jobs. And two, by 2045, the minority is no longer going to be the minority, absolutely. Right? So I think that actually does scare some people off. So let's talk about them. Well, particularly because immigrants are helping the economy. Mm-hmm. And when we're talking about globalization, we can't support the growth that we projected in Oklahoma and as a nation unless we start importing people. Yeah, we just can't.
That's true.
And other countries are doing it. Other countries are actually paying to have people come, particularly entrepreneurs, to come in and do jobs in STEM and in entrepreneurship. And we're sending the exact opposite message.
Yeah.
Before people, especially since I did the foreign direct investment that you mentioned,
yeah.
People would always say, well, why do American companies go to another country, because of cheap labor? Perhaps, and even to this day, perhaps they offshore to lower the cost of labor. Some is just to be competitive in the global market. But think about this. If we are not engaging in the global economy and we're not supporting those jobs and bringing people in to take care of those jobs because we do have a labor shortage, companies are going to move not because of the low cost of labor, but because in search of talent.
Yeah.
So we're actually going to see more companies exiting because we can't produce the talent that and we just can't keep up with the labor demands.
Yeah, yeah. Great, great information. Let's briefly, if you can kind of just introduce this Forward.us and the work that they're doing and just some final thoughts to our listening audience.
We're going to post this Fast Facts on Oklahoma immigration to our Facebook page, too.
Yeah, so I can, I love Forward.us. I've engaged with them for years now. It's an organization that is backed by Mark Zuckerberg and a lot of the tech CEOs and entrepreneurs throughout the country. Basically, again, because they see the need for immigrants to support the tech industry and the country as a whole. So it's a great organization, Forward.us, bipartisan.
Wonderful. Any final last thoughts? If you could tell our listeners just one thing, one takeaway, many takeaways they have, but one final takeaway from this debate, what would it be?
I think it's important to remember that immigrants are humans. They're people just like anybody. So what's happening right now in the political world is that we're taking away that humankind from these people. Like we're just pointing fingers and treating them or talking about them like as a problem, as we're calling them criminals. So I think it's important to remember that the immigrants are human beings. They're good people. They're bad people.
Their mothers, their fathers, their brothers, their sisters, mm-hmm. their our friends.
So it's I think that would be what I want everybody to take from this. That let's remember they're people just like anyone.
Mm-hmm. As for me, kind of reiterating what I said earlier is really get those misconceptions out of the way in the area of education, in the area of employment. There's just so many things going around that has been going around for some time, for a long time actually, of, you know, what exactly is going on, what exactly are immigrants doing, what are they not doing, who are they as people. And I feel like definitely the best way to start is by really immersing yourself in that community. If you know somebody, you know, that is an immigrant, whether it be, you know, documented or not, or, you know, under DACA or whatever, just reaching out and actually learning from their experiences, like sitting with them and talking to them and just listening to their experience coming here, to their experience maybe going through the legal system, their experience, you know, going through the educational system. You know, what they had to do to get what they're at and what they're striving for in the future. And I just feel like that's something that really needs to be put into light more often nowadays.
We all belong here. There is no space that a human being should not be allowed to occupy. Mm-hmm. And this country belongs to us all. And until we get that into our heads, we'll never solve anything. Because history will speak of us. Mm-hmm. Somewhere in the distant future, a scribe will reach down deep into the archives of our time. And what will she find? Will she discover that we overcame our differences? Will she find that out of many, we became one? Or will she find that we solved nothing and remain a divided peoples? Yes,
history will speak of us.
We can make a difference if we try. We can beat the change that's in our lives. All we gotta do is work together. We gotta raise our children better. We gotta stop the hate, and spread the love.
One mic, one voice. can change the world, it's your choice. One mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice. One mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice. One mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice.
Your choice.
Today's broadcast is being brought to you by Blacken Studios. To learn more about Blacken Studios, please visit them at blackenstudios.com or visit them on their Facebook page, Blacken Studios. Today's broadcast is also being brought to you by Perry Publishing and Broadcasting. To learn more about Perry Publishing and Broadcasting, please visit their website at perrypublishingandbroadcasting.net. The opinions of the One Mic, One Voice show do not reflect the views of Blacken Studios or Perry Publishing and Broadcasting. Thank you for downloading the One Mic, One Voice show.